Hello, welcome or welcome back to the Just Eat Normally podcast for eating disorder recovery with me, Dr. Rachel Evans. I am a psychologist, hypnotherapist with a PhD in the psychology of eating and specialist training in eating disorder recovery, as well as personal experience of going through an eating disorder and coming out the other side, which makes me super passionate about what I do. And in every episode, as with my one-to-one clients, I'm bringing you academic knowledge, information, and theories, as well as therapeutic skills and personal experiences, be that mine or experiences of my guests, for a unique perspective on eating disorder recovery. So join me on this podcast as I speak to fellow experts in eating disorder recovery, eating disorder survivors with inspiring stories, and also throw in some bite-sized solo episodes with recovery tips or new ways for you to think about things. The goal of this podcast is to give you food for thought, to shift your mindset, to boost your motivation, and to help you find your own version of normal eating, which will allow you to live a truly nourished life. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I'm here with Sophie Killip. She is a therapist and a coach who specializes in eating disorder recovery and body. Oh my God, I can't even talk today. We're too excited, which I'll tell you what we're excited about in a minute. So let me start that again. Specializes in eating disorder recovery and body image healing. And she completed her master's degree in the US and lived there for several years during her early 20s before returning home to England. And she currently works in private practice, a university counseling service, and inpatient treatment center for young people recovering from anorexia. And what we are excited about is because prior to this, Sophie was saying, oh, you live in Derby, which I do. And she used to live in Derby. And I asked her if her mum used to be a food tech teacher, and she did. And it turns out that Sophie's mum taught me food tech at school. So small world.
Absolutely wild.
Oh, okay. So we didn't actually know each other prior to this, did we? I just knew your mum. So what was your relationship with food and body image and exercise like when you were growing up?
So when I was a lot younger, I guess throughout my school years all the way up until probably like age 18, it was really like quote unquote normal. I don't really think I thought about it that much, to be honest. Obviously my mum being a food technology teacher would make the most incredible meals at home growing up, and I was a dancer as well. I definitely fit into that stereotype of kind of the not necessarily a perfect body, but I was definitely within that realm of like having the privilege of being in an able body. You know, I had my blonde hair, I had a very fast metabolism at the time, I was dancing a lot. I think in many ways I really liked the way that I looked. I felt like I could kind of just eat whatever I want and really not think about anything around that at all. So yeah, growing up, it was really good and just not really something that I ever thought about. I think it was only until I was in my my later teenage years, probably when I went to university actually, that I started to kind of like overthink it a lot more. There's probably a bit of a trigger actually when I was in maybe like year 13 and we were all preparing to go on our summer holiday. And at that point I was like, right, I really want to weigh this amount. And so I downloaded my fitness pal. I was recording my calories and everything. And I think it was all done in a very like harmless way at the time. I was kind of just like wanting to keep on track of my health. But then I think as I began to kind of like go into those vicious cycles of using the app when I was at university, when my body was changing, that was when my relationship with my body definitely started to change.
When you were saying that, and you're saying that you I can't quite remember how you phrase it, like wanted to lose weight or reach a certain weight, was there any like rationale for that weight? Because I feel like people kind of just look a number out of thin air sometimes almost, don't they? That's like lower than what you currently weigh?
Yeah, I don't really know if I had a specific number in mind, but I think from 16 to 18, I probably noticed myself gaining a bit of weight, and I maybe was looking at pictures of myself and thought, oh, you know, my tummy looks a bit big, or my thighs look a bit big, or I don't look very good from that angle. So I probably just came up with a ballpark figure of like, right, I want to lose half a stone before I go on holiday. And I don't really know if I had like a specific shape in mind, but yeah, it was just sort of that thing of like, oh, I need to weigh less than I do right now, but I don't really know why that is, or at least I didn't know that at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's quite common, isn't it? Actually, yeah, I suppose what I just said, like in terms of sometimes people do have this, I must be this exact weight, which obviously isn't possible because our weight fluctuates all the time anyway. You couldn't stay exactly the same weight every single hour of every single day. And they have this really set rigid thing, or just like you were saying, like, I need to weigh less than I do. So even if you lose weight, you still feel like you need to weigh less. Even though you've lost it, you always need to weigh less and less, because that kind of automatic thought doesn't necessarily go away, even if you did lose the weight. And I guess looking back on it now, what factors do you think were involved in feeling like you needed to change your body shape?
I think it was almost a norm at school that that's just what everybody was doing. So like, because everybody else around me was quote unquote getting fit and getting into shape before we went on this holiday, it was like, oh, you know, I'm just going to kind of hop on the bandwagon of that as well. And I know these days, like social media has such a big impact. And even in my early 20s, when I was using social media more, that definitely had a big impact on me. But I don't think I even downloaded Instagram until I was in like year 13. And even on things like Facebook, I don't specifically remember comparing my body to other people's, but I think it almost happened so subtly. Like when I look back now at magazines and advertisements and, you know, like the Spice Girls documentary as well, that just promoted like really unrealistic beauty ideals, disordered eating, all of that. I think it was happening under the surface and I just wasn't aware of it. And then when I got to a point when I was in like my first year of university and I did start to gain weight and really kind of like feel the impact of that, that, you know, there were these messages that like I should be losing weight or I should be working towards like a goal dress back to like a size again, is when I actually started to feel it more. I don't know if that really answers your question, but yeah, just seeing everybody else around me doing it really normalized, like, oh, this is just what we all do, you know? And as you say before, with that whole, like, no matter how much you weigh, always seems to be that you're trying to weigh less than you actually do. I can totally relate to that, because even when I was at a, you know, a quote unquote weight that maybe I wanted to be at in the midst of using my fitness pal, I still remember thinking, oh, I don't like how I look in that picture, or like I've got too many rolls here, or like I was really bloated. And like, there's just, unless you are this 2D character, your body is always going to change shape, isn't it? And it probably was also like the lack of awareness that I had around that, like not knowing that, oh, it's normal for your body to fluctuate. I don't think I was ever told that at all growing up.
Yeah, I think if people have this point in their life when they're almost, when they do feel happier about their body, you kind of want to stay at that point. I mean, happier in terms of, if diet culture has influenced you and you're thinking, oh, my body fits with the ideal. And then, like you say, things change just growing up, different phases of life, or even like, sometimes I give the example, like, I don't weigh myself, but I just know from how my clothes fit, they tend to be a bit tighter in winter, whereas a bit less tight in the summer generally, because I'm going for more walks and stuff. And just my lifestyle has naturally changed a little bit. But if I was so focused on the scales and what they were telling me, then that wouldn't be good for my mental health in the winter, I don't think, you know, when my body's starting to change, and then I'd probably have to try and overexercise and things wouldn't go very well. So I think sometimes just that bit of acceptance that things are going to change, or like, now I've had a baby, things have changed, thinking, shall I buy a bigger size clothes? Is my body going to change back a bit? Who knows? I'm trying to just leave it up in the air and just think, okay, right, well, this is another kind of life transition, which actually I think we're going to talk a bit later about the way I'm trying to think about now, is like my body's supporting me through this, which we'll put a pin in that for a second.
Definitely. Yeah.
So what is body image?
So definitely a very broad concept, isn't it? I don't really think there's like one specific definition that everybody can agree on, but the way I look at it is the way in which you see yourself when you look in the mirror, or when you picture yourself in your mind. And obviously, you know, we have our own personal relationship with our bodies and the way that we look, but our body image is also very influenced by our environment. So the people around us, the culture that we live in, societal expectations of what we should or shouldn't look like, and all of that together then creates this kind of image, or even feelings, thoughts about how we kind of relate to our bodies and how we feel about them.
Yeah, thank you so much for explaining that. I actually did a training about body image, and I've got what I wrote down about that. So it's kind of what you were saying about our perceptions, our attitudes, our beliefs about our body, especially like its appearance. But also what I thought maybe to draw out is what you said, it's our thoughts, our feelings. So maybe like feeling proud about certain aspects, or like feeling ashamed of certain aspects or something, or our satisfaction about it. But it's also like the salience. So that's like the value or the importance that we put on it. Because I think someone, for example, like, let's just take, I don't really like my nose. At times it had bothered me when I was like at school, but now I don't like it, but I don't really care that I don't like it. I'm not going to get a nose job. I'm just like, okay, if I could magically have a different one, maybe I'd magically have a different one, but it doesn't bother me too much. So I think it's also important to think about that when we think about our body image. Actually, what we also might come on to talking about is that you don't have to love every aspect of your body, but you might not like it, but it's just not that important to you. I think when people are struggling with their body image, it's because it's like really important to them what they look like. And I'm not saying you don't care at all. Obviously brush your hair in the morning, etc. But, you know, it doesn't have to be the most important thing.
Yeah. That's a really interesting point, actually, because I guess the amount you like, how much you value your body image, then dictates so many other things. It really dictates those feelings, doesn't it? And if you place so much importance on the way that you look, I would argue that you will be way more likely to actually experience negative body image. You know, if you think of it as like a pie chart of like all of the different things that really like bring so much value to you. And if what, like over 50% of that is taken up by appearance, chances are if one thing happens that kind of goes out of line of what you deem to be like, you know, suitable towards your body image, then that's it. It could, you know, ruin your whole week, your whole month, your whole year even. So yeah, that's a really interesting point.
Yeah. I was thinking when you're saying that as well, it's like, you know, if you get a spot, like somebody might be like, oh, I've got a spot, that's annoying, which I do think that even this morning, like my skin was really, really good when I was pregnant. And now it's like, who knows what's going on with hormones. So I'm like, oh, great. But you know, like you're saying, actually someone else, that might ruin their day. They might spend a long time trying to cover it up with makeup, which is not a good or a bad thing. Like I kind of talk in my podcast or with my clients, like, what is the effect it's having on your life then? Does it mean that you're late for something because you were trying to cover it up, or you don't go to an event because of that? So I'm not trying to be judgmental about people who put makeup on their spot. No. I think it's perfectly fine. It's just the context and how it's affecting you. So I guess, what do you think that a body image, a positive body image, means? Like, what does that mean to you?
I think it can really vary. Like, it can be on this like big long continuum, and it really depends on which sort of philosophy you align with more. So we all know about the body positivity world that I think really aims to sort of encourage, you know, the acceptance of all bodies, encourages us to love our bodies and to love all bodies of shapes and sizes. And then because that just became so mainstream and kind of taken over really by people that are living in more of the quote unquote, you know, stereotypical like ideal bodies, when actually it did start with people that were living in more marginalized bodies, the like body acceptance and the body neutrality side of it has also really come into play. But I think, I don't really know if I have one specific definition of what positive body image is, but ultimately it's knowing that your body is good and is acceptable and is worthy without you having to love the way it looks every single day. So a lot of people that are trying to improve their relationship with their bodies might assume that they need to work towards loving the way that their body looks every single day. And for 99.9% of us, that's just not realistic. You know, we all experience negative thoughts in life. It is just part of the human experience. So of course, we're going to experience them towards our bodies as well when we live in such an external world. So I think it's just coming to that realization that, you know, you can accept your body, you can know that it's so worthy, you can focus on what your body can actually do for you as well. And all of those things together help you to create a positive body image, but that really looks different for each person. And I don't feel as though I can necessarily speak from everybody's experience because of like my own identity. You know, I don't feel like it's my place to kind of say, right, you should be working towards this specific type of body image. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And you touched on some other concepts there about sort of body neutrality or body acceptance, which like you say is more, says it in the name, doesn't it? Like my body's a good body, or my, what's another word for acceptance? When you were talking, I was like, oh yeah, I can explain that and unpack it.
Body acceptance, you mean, or with body neutrality?
Yeah, so what's the difference?
So I suppose body acceptance is more about working towards accepting your body as it is without having to change it. Mm-hmm. Whereas body neutrality is more about not seeing your body as either good or bad, but kind of taking away the attention from body image in general. So instead focusing on other aspects of who you are, your personality, like your relationships, your career, the things that really interest you, and kind of just like parking up body image altogether. So it's very much taking that kind of neutral approach where there really isn't much focus at all on your body. So I almost feel as though it kind of like takes it a step further. That's how I see it anyways.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for explaining. So I guess if someone's listening and they notice that maybe they don't have the best relationship with their body, like we say, they're not very accepting, or there's lots of areas of their body or like the whole body shape or weight that they really don't like, and they really are placing a lot of importance on that, you know, it's having an effect day to day or every week, like what could someone do to go about healing their body image?
So some different like tips and techniques on how to improve your body image. Well, one of the things I always really like to go to is body gratitude. So expressing gratitude towards what you feel grateful for about what your body can do for you. So that can be really challenging for somebody that is very focused on, you know, their external appearance, the way that it looks like. But the body image researchers, Lindsay and Lexi Kite, they have this motto that says, your body is an instrument, not an ornament. And I love that. And I think it's an amazing affirmation to practice, which I guess is a whole thing in itself. But body gratitude might just be, you know, whilst you're journaling in the evening or in the morning, whenever you prefer to, you write down three things that you feel grateful for about what your body can do for you. An example might be, I feel really grateful for my legs because they allow me to walk and travel around the world. Or I feel really grateful for my eyes because they allow me to go and see amazing places. Kind of like, you know, with you were saying about your nose and how you didn't used to like that when you were younger. It might be like, I feel so grateful for my nose because it allows me to be able to smell like different perfumes or even different foods, or, you know, just like the fresh grass when you're like walking on a summer's day in England. And when we tap into that gratitude, it's kind of like a gateway emotion for more of those positive feelings, you know, like joy and happiness. And I think it's a lot more achievable to kind of like go down that direction rather than like, you know, just trying to sort of force yourself to like certain aspects about the way that you look, which ultimately like doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things anyway. And I guess that goes on to another point, which is, when it comes to body image resilience, so the ability to really be able to get back up once you've experienced some negative thoughts around your body, is to have a supportive network around you. Because when we really dig into, you know, why we want to look a certain way, often it does go down to those superficial reasons of like, oh, I just kind of wanted to do that for external validation, or I felt that pressure from society. And when we have real, genuine relationships with in our life, whether that be family or friends, you know, people that really love us for who we can remind ourselves that actually the way we look has nothing to do with who we are as a person. And I love that quote that's like, in the end, we won't remember the prettiest face, we'll remember the prettiest heart, or something like that. So it just goes back to like, what's on the inside matters so much more.
Yeah, I really love this concept of body image resilience, because kind of like you were saying earlier, like, for most people at some point, even if you've done a lot of healing for your body image, there possibly is going to be that day when you're not feeling great about yourself. Like, for my clients, when we work together and say it's been like 3 or 4 months and they're generally feeling a lot better about themselves and about their body. Usually for my female clients who have a period, it's like the week of their period. Maybe if they're feeling a bit more bloated, or maybe their jeans aren't fitting quite right, or they're just feeling a bit blur, like physically blur, not looking blur. And then they might have a bad body image week and kind of panic, like, oh my god, has nothing changed since we started working together? Well, actually a lot has changed. And I think it's about learning, actually, so if I do have that thought, how can I think differently towards it? Like you say, maybe bring in some gratitude, like, oh, actually I'm it's kind of hard in the moment if you're getting period pains and stuff, but like, actually I'm really pleased that my hormones are working to support me, or whatever it was going to be, or really pleased that my body's going to get over this next week and not be on my period.
Yeah. And like the female body is so powerful, isn't it? I mean, the fact that we can like go through all of that pain of like having a child or dealing with period pains, and yet we come out on the other side and we're like, oh, you know, I'm okay now. So even that reminder of like, the way I feel right now is maybe not so great, but that doesn't mean it's going to be that way forever. Because like our feelings, our physical feelings, our emotional feelings, they're all temporary anyways, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's really helped me a lot sometimes when I get anxious about stuff, or like sad about stuff, or we just have thoughts like, oh my God, like actually I'm not always going to think like this. And I suppose if you feel like you are always going to think like this, then there's potentially things that you could do to help so you didn't always feel like that. And obviously it's easier said than done. But yeah, I think that's such a good point about, I'm going to say it again, body image resilience, if anyone wants to look into that a bit more. I guess apart from having a supportive network, and we just kind of mentioned in that conversation as well about changing your self-talk, is there anything else that people can do to like improve this resilience?
Yeah, so just from what I've read, and I'm definitely kind of in the midst of doing my own reading around body image resilience, but I think it's like a fascinating topic. It's amazing that like so much time and effort is going into that. But what they found in the research is that people that have body image resilience are able to acknowledge why they might be experiencing negative body in the first place. So they have enough self-awareness to be like, okay, I'm feeling this way because of the pressures that are going on around me on social media, in our society. I think you mentioned before that like this is something that gets talked about a lot, but and I think at the same time, it's so important that we just constantly bring it up, you know, like we have just been so conditioned to think that our bodies are not enough as we are and that we need X, Y, and Z product and we need X, Y, and Z treatment done. So when we have the awareness to be like, hold on, that's coming back to that internalization when I was younger, when I was a teenager, even these days, you're able to kind of like get some perspective from it. And I always talk about like being in the observer role, you know, where you kind of like zoom out of that really emotional state and you're like, oh, that's why I feel the way that, I do. And that's totally valid. And so when we can kind of self-validate why we feel the way we feel and maybe even express some of that anger that we have towards a culture that's trying to make us fit into this tiny little box, I think we can then kind of like make a stand against it and say, actually, I don't need to do that. I can give myself permission to just show up the way that I am right now without having to try and change or manipulate the way that I look. So I suppose accept or acknowledging that those pressures are there, those toxic messages are there, and also actively rejecting them.
Yeah, I think I like what you said, that awareness piece I think is really important. Like I explain it in a slightly different way in terms of like looking to make sense of what happened and why you're feeling a certain way, and you might not exactly know, but sometimes once it makes sense in your mind, I don't know why that really helps me personally and quite a lot of my clients. You're like, oh, okay, well, makes sense. You can almost get over it a little bit then when you've realized, rather than kind of ruminating on the thing that you don't like about yourself for a while. So we did cover quite a lot about body image. I don't have any more specific questions, but is there anything that you feel like we haven't covered that you would like to say that you think is important?
My gosh. I think if we, I feel like I need a sec to think about it.
Oh, go ahead. I put you on the spot there.
I know. I guess in addition to like the body gratitude, those affirmations can also be really helpful. And I know that like, well, we all do, we do quite a good job, don't we, in like the mainstream world, to just sort of like kind of, I suppose, make it monetize off of everything. But when I think of affirmations, I think of coming up with statements that you are working towards that maybe don't necessarily completely resonate with you at that time, but something that maybe isn't too far away from the truth. So for example, if you're in a place where, you know, you have really, really low self-worth and you are all of a sudden wanting to love yourself every single day, telling yourself I love myself might not necessarily be totally helpful for you in that moment. But if we can come up with some affirmations that just remind us of the things that maybe we do know when we're in more of that like body image resilient state, for example, my body is an instrument, not an ornament, or I am so much more than my body. My body is not the thing that defines my worth. Like, you know, all of those kind of examples, and maybe even can even like put some of them in show notes or something like that, just so that there's some examples for people to read out. And really getting into the habit of like practicing them on a daily basis, I think it just sort of reprograms your mind, because there's so much of that like negative chatter that goes on, and it's all happening a lot of the time in a very subconscious way. So if we're actively telling ourselves these messages day in, day out, slowly but surely our minds will adjust. And it's not just a case of like practicing this once and then that's it, you know, everything is magically fixed. I know a lot of us do just want these problems to kind of go away, and we want to feel a lot better. But really kind of getting into a habit of doing them on a daily basis is so important.
Yeah, I think, like you say, I think that repetition is really important with my clients. When we do the hypnotherapy, then they have a recording to listen to of like the positive suggestions and things like you said. Can't remember the examples now. My brain has really gone today. We were talking about this beforehand, weren't we? About how we want to be like super eloquent, and then our brain's like, see ya, you were thinking 10 million things, but nothing now. But yeah, they listen to it. So they almost get that repetition. And then even when you finish listening, it's easier to think those things, because obviously that neural pathway has been built up. I actually just wanted to add one thing, because in the previous podcast that I was recording with Hannah, I started saying something, but then it flashed up with like a warning message and like stopped recording, because basically I haven't deleted any previous recordings of Zoom off my computer. So I had no disk space. And I was just saying something, but I think it does fit in with what you were saying earlier, but I didn't want to stop you because you went on to talk about something else about pictures and being like a 2D image and stuff. Because I hope I can explain this in the way that I mean it to come out. but one of my clients said something really good once that I'd not really thought about, because I think often, I'm not sure if you do as well, I talk to clients about, you know, they've had a picture taken of them that they don't like. And then sometimes when you're struggling with an eating disorder or bad kind of bad body image days, that can, like we said before, like ruin your whole day. But actually she was saying like, it is just a snapshot. And I think sometimes people do have an unflattering angle, or maybe you don't like how you look at yourself in that angle, but actually as a person, you are not that picture. You know, when people see you from all your angles, and also people aren't just looking at your body, they're looking at what they know about you and stuff. Like I have this thing when sometimes on TV, this is an example of it, like they'll be an actor or something, and then I'll see them and they'll be in the show, and then halfway through I'll be like, oh my god, I thought they had a different color hair, and suddenly like notice what color hair their hair is, or something, or there'll be something about them that somehow I thought was different for some reason, but it wasn't. So I think sometimes people aren't looking at us in the same way as they're looking at that photo. Mm-hmm. And almost then that photo doesn't really matter then, does it? Because it was just one snapshot of moment of time.
Exactly. It's literally, that's the thing. It's literally one snapshot. So when you see all of these influencers on Instagram that are posing and they've got the perfect lighting and they've spent hours doing their makeup and they've got a stylist and this and that, there's all these behind the scenes. And then all of a sudden you see this one snapshot of what that person looks like. And our brains make so many assumptions, don't we, about what that person looks like every single day, about maybe what they're like as a person. You know, our mind just kind of wanders and goes down all of those angles. But the thing is that we're not a 2D snapshot. We're this like beautiful, magical, unique 3D human being. And I think that needs to be celebrated so much more than just one picture. I actually feel like the other day I was just kind of like having a bit of a bad body image day, and I took a picture of myself and I was like, ugh, I really don't like that. And it did stay with me for, I don't know, maybe like half an hour or something like that. I was like really ruminating about it in the car or something. And I was like, right, I need to like somehow kind of get myself out of this frame of mind. And I was like, that is one picture, that is one day, one second, one snapshot. Like, that is not who I am in any way. And, you know, if you're like on holiday or something and you go and take a picture of a sunset or of a beach and you're like, oh, like, that does not look like what it was actually like. When I recently went to the Netherlands to go and see two of my best friends, I took some pictures of the beach. And I remember that day being so happy. I was back with my friends. I hadn't seen them in years. And I remember looking and feeling a bit disappointed at the picture, and I was like, it's just the same as that, you know. Just because you don't capture, I guess, what you wanted in that photo doesn't mean that, like, you don't have so much beauty within yourself, you know. And that's on an internal level as well, but there's so much that goes behind the scenes in pictures on Instagram, and we forget about that, slash we're not even aware of it because we're not seeing all of those behind the scenes.
Yeah, I wonder if it's got worse. This is a slight tangent, but you know, since we've got a camera on our phone that's like good quality, I saw this meme the other day that was like, basically said all of these things can now be in your phone, and it was like a calculator and can't remember the, oh, like a Walkman, like all of, like, literally 20 different things. I can't remember what they were because I didn't bother to look at it very well. I was just like, oh yeah, it's true. But you know, we have all games, probably you had like an actual Game Boy. I mean, people still probably do have that, don't they? But not as much. Like all those things, it's so easy for us, but oh, let me just take a picture. Let's just take a picture of that. Whereas I don't know how I'm ever many years ago, but like even when I was at university in like my first few years, like the camera, I think you did have a camera on your phone, but it's really rubbish. Like I had a physical camera that I would take on a night out with me. And then before that, obviously we had film cameras, and then people didn't really have a camera. So I wonder if this sort of stuff, I guess it can only be an issue now, really, that we can really easily take a photo of ourselves. And like you say, then we want it to look like that photo on Instagram. But
yeah, I think the competition has definitely gone up, hasn't it? Because, and also we have so much access to a camera. As you said, like going on a night out literally meant taking a pink, what were those like really popular, like was it Sony or like something else? We all had the same camera but in different colors. And I remember like some people would just take hundreds of pictures and you'd be like, oh no, they're gonna upload these pictures, we're all gonna not like the way that we look. But yeah, it took so much more effort, didn't it? Whereas now it's like, oh, you can just like open your phone and take pictures, or everybody is striving for that perfect iPhone 13 photo that all of the influencers seem to have, and that like the average person doesn't necessarily have. Like I don't have an iPhone 13, first of all. No. I don't necessarily have the money for an iPhone 13, but second of all, like I don't really need one either. So I think that kind of like perfectionism that comes into play with it all as well can be like a really big part in getting that quote unquote perfect picture.
Yeah, and I think I'm glad we talked about this again, because we did actually talk about this a little bit in the last episode, but I think it's really important and worth repeating that actually in recovery as well, I think a part of it is like what we said before, building up your self-talk. And so hearing these conversations multiple times, maybe next time you do notice yourself almost going down that rabbit hole of comparison, or maybe if you've noticed that you're feeling bad about your body and you do like what we said, the acknowledging or the observing what was going on, oh maybe it was I saw that person on Instagram, that now you've got some more things that you can say to yourself in that moment and remembering it's not real, etc., etc. And I think the more you can do that, the easier it is to automatically think those things in the beginning, but it might be a conscious like effortful thing to do in the first place a couple of times before you get to that other point. So what would you say to a client who comes to you and tells you that they just want to eat normally?
Wow, I'm definitely feeling the pressure of like, what can I say that's like the perfect thing to say as such?
No, everyone answers differently.
Do they? Okay. My mind is just going towards like, you know, wanting to know more about like what normal actually is to that person. Like where have we even got this idea of normal from? So I'd probably say something along the lines of like, normal isn't a thing as such. I don't know if I'm on the right tracks here, but like normal just isn't a thing. what is normal for one person is so different for everybody else. And I'd probably just want to like turn it back around onto them and ask like, well, what do you want? Like, what, let's tap into like more of those intuitive parts of you, like, and what does that actually look like for you in an ideal world where you do have a good relationship with food and a good relationship with your body? I feel like I should have prepared more for that question, to be honest. But
No, it's good to get it off the cuff. Yeah, it's funny. Like the people who are more therapists are usually like, "What does normal mean to you?" Which is like a good question. But you know, when you're on the receiving end of questions like that, because I don't know.
Stop
asking me. I just want you to fix everything.
Yeah, and I think I definitely like working in a setting that has like short-term counseling, I often really feel that pressure to like come up with answers for everybody. So it's very exciting in private practice that like I can kind of actually explore those questions with people. But I suppose, yeah, like on the other hand of that, on the other side of that, like education around food is really, really important. We're definitely not always exposed to what like a typical amount of like each portion size is, for example. So kind of working through with a client what that might look like in a way that's not gonna, you know, trigger up. It needs to be this size, and this size is the way that it absolutely has to be. But I'm curious to know as to what you would say.
Oh, what would I say? You know, usually I'm like, well, listen to episode one of my podcast. Not quite that blunt, but sometimes. I was actually going to ask you, this is a slight tangent we're going on, but I didn't want to know. I was doing a little bit of stalking on your website and I noticed that you do, oh, what is it called? Like, do you know you sit with people in meals?
Meal support sessions.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So, sorry, were you going to elaborate on that question?
Oh, I suppose, just because I'd seen someone in a Facebook group for like therapist asking to find someone to support their clients with that because they didn't do it. So I was just wondering like all about it in a nutshell, because otherwise we're going to go on, but I just thought other people who are listening might be interested in this as well, so I just ask you on the podcast rather than at the end. But like, I suppose, what does that look like? How can it help?
So I kind of got this idea from my experience of working at like a private eating disorder treatment program in America, where like as a therapist, you would also be required to sit with clients and do meal support sessions with them as well. I think it's a really important part of like healing, to be honest, and to be able to sort of sit there with a therapist and kind of have that, even if it's just the support of like having somebody next to you eating the same thing as you, it sort of normalizes, oh, okay, like I'm required to eat this, this person's eating this as well. But what we would always do is kind of go around and do like a feeling check-in, and then also check in on our hunger and fullness levels before and afterwards, just to kind of get you to bring into awareness of your hunger and fullness cues. As we all know, when it comes to recovering from an eating disorder, those cues can be quite skewed initially, and the more we can kind of practice tapping into that awareness around them before and after meals, I think that can just really help in the whole recovery. There's also like ERP snacks. Have you like come across that term before?
Or on your website?
So like the exposure response prevention, which is where ultimately, you know, you're eating a snack that's like a challenging, maybe a fear food of some kind, and as you are doing that, you might even be required to like fill out a little worksheet of like, okay, before I eat this, like how am I feeling, are there any thoughts that are coming up for me right now? Because ultimately, like, that can be one of the most triggering situations for somebody that's in eating disorder recovery, and really giving them an opportunity to kind of tap into what those thoughts actually are in that moment. I often hear clients say, well, it's kind of hard to explain it to you right now because I'm not really feeling that way. You've really caught me on a good day, which can often be the case when somebody comes to counseling as well, right? Like they know that they're about to go and speak about their problems. They know that they're going to have like a safe space to be able to do that. And then even like in the midst of that ERP snack, again, you might kind of just pick up your pencil, write down a few things, or even say them out loud with, you know, your counselor, therapist, psychologist, whoever that may be. And so I sort of offer them in addition to counseling sessions. So it would need to be a requirement that somebody is receiving counseling sessions in order to then do the meal support as well. Kind of like with, you know, like eating disorder coaching, it's a requirement really to be in that kind of therapeutic process as well as the coaching.
Yeah, thank you so much for explaining. So where could people find you if they want to learn more about you or to work with you?
So at the moment, my Instagram handle is _eatingdisordertherapist. I recently changed it from Counselor Sophie. It just felt much more, I felt a lot more aligned with that name. And then my website is sophiekillip.com. So Killip is K-I-L-L-I-P for Papa. Bit of a strange one, but yeah, I would say my website or my Instagram.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Just Eat Normally podcast. I hope you found this enjoyable, interesting and insightful and informative. And if you did, make sure to subscribe to hear the next episode. And just remember that you can check out the show notes for contact details and extra resources.